rights.
This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're into family law, and we're focusing on divorce and child custody, and in particular, avoiding fighting and other unproductive divorce traps. I haven't done a program focusing on this kind of problem before, although we've talked about mediation several times. But a lot of energy goes into fighting and other kinds of unproductive divorce traps that we're going to be talking about, and maybe if you're faced with something like this, this program may help you. My guests are both family law attorneys. Both of them are former chairs of the family law section of the San Mateo County Bar Association. I think you may recall, if you've listened to this program with any regularity, my guest to begin with is Esther Rosenfeld, and Esther has an office in San Mateo. And my other guest, first time he's done radio. And actually, I think you're going to find that he's going to be pretty good here. I'm pretty impressed so far. Douglas Robin. And Doug is also a certified specialist in family law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. And this program is funded both by the San Mateo County Bar Association and the California Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, which certifies 11 fields of law. And I'll let you know how to find out who your certified specialist may be in your geographic area, wherever you are. And we're going to give those of you who are listening to the program live an opportunity to call in the second half hour. Whether you are in the Bay Area or whether you're anywhere in the state and listening to us on the internet at www.kow.org, I will let you know. So, Esther and Doug, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Very nice to have you here.
Thank you for
having me. Let me ask you this, if you would, please. What do you believe your clients, generally speaking, are experiencing? I mean, the idea of divorce, the idea of splitting with your spouse, the idea of having, if you have children, your children subjected to divorce and whatever else may come along is highly charged. So what do you see that your potential clients are experiencing as they come into your office, Doug, or come in into the door of your office?
Well, I would say two things, Chuck. First, the divorce process is a life-changing event or series of events, and it's a process that can take a considerable period of time, and it's also a legal proceeding. When parties are in the midst of divorce, they come to our office and they're generally experiencing the following. They come in experiencing tremendous fear and uncertainty about their financial future, what their living arrangements are, what's going to happen in terms of custody. And while they're coming in with all this fear of the uncertainty and the unknown, as well as the unknown of the dissolution process, which they probably never have been through litigation, they're dealing with all these difficult emotions to navigate: anger, shame, guilt of a failed relationship.
And revenge.
And revenge.
Also, some people, I presume.
That's correct. And they have tremendous levels of stress and anxiety. One of the things that we often see, particularly at the beginning, is that when parties are experiencing very difficult emotions, they tend to be in very highly reactive states. And it can be very difficult to navigate this process. And Esther and I want to talk about ways that we can improve the process and at least minimize some of the pitfalls that people do in this process when they're really being led more by the difficult emotions that they're experiencing.
Absolutely. And I'll just add to what Doug said. You know, it's different from every other kind of civil case because it's a no-fault system here. So even though the parties may be feeling all of those feelings that Doug so eloquently outlined, and they may really feel like the other side did something wrong and they want to blame somebody and they want to lash out and they want to get some kind of revenge, that doesn't matter in the eyes of the California law. If you want a divorce, you get a divorce, and it doesn't matter who did what to whom in the process. Of course, there are exceptions where there's abuse, and we'll talk about that later on, and that comes into play. But this, the feelings that they're feeling of wanting to blame will fuel decisions people make, often to their detriment and to the detriment of the children. And so the thing, what we want to discuss today are what are some concrete tools that people can use to avoid those kinds of traps and not get into the revenge fantasies where either they're going to use their kids to get back at the other side or they're going to use money to hypothetically make themselves whole, but really it's never going to fill the gap that they're feeling inside.
Do you think, before you talk about things that you feel the potential divorcee, divorcer, whatever the proper terminology is, do you think that, generally speaking, family law attorneys, when someone comes into a family lawyer's office, explain to someone, by the way, here's what happens. If you really want to go to the throat, go for the jugular of your spouse, and we go to trial, it's going to cost you so much to do this. If you want to try to just calm down a bit and really try to work this thing out so that there's cooperation, it's going to be a lot cheaper along these lines. Do attorneys do that, generally speaking?
I think, generally speaking, most attorneys will do that. I mean, remember that in California, certainly in San Mateo County, in Santa Clara County, I think in other counties, there are mandatory forms that lay out information for alternative dispute resolution, sometimes also called appropriate dispute resolution in the new politically correct term.
I love that.
Term.
The appropriate, oh, brother.
So, that it was never an alternative to begin with. This is actually the way it should be done, which has some merit. But so the attorneys, parties who are going through the process, whether they're represented by an attorney or not, will be notified in some fashion by the court, because if you're a pro per and you go to file, you're going to be handed a stack of forms, and one of them is going to explain what the different kinds of alternative / appropriate dispute resolution are that you could use. And then there's also mandatory mediation, also called recommending or non-recommending counseling in every court in California when it comes to custody issues. So there is already a framework for dealing with the divorce case cooperatively. And then there's a law that tells us that parties have mandatory disclosure duties, and this is financial disclosure, right at the beginning of a
trust,
case.
Trust relationship, essentially.
There is
not
intended to be, well, certainly parties when they're married are in a confidential fiduciary relationship to one another, and they have fiduciary duties that extend until the date of the divorce. And what I'm referring to specifically in terms of the disclosure requirements is a mandate in the law that the parties exchange disclosures early on in the case, that they augment those, et cetera. And so there's a requirement to do the same at the end of the case. It's often waived because by then everybody has the financial information they need. Mm-hmm. But again, going back to the framework, the idea behind this, the California legislature, when in drafting these laws, wants it to be a process whereby we're not playing hide the ball and this is not turning into, you know, extreme litigation. So there is that process there. How different lawyers handle it varies from case to case, but I think that the structures are in place for divorces to be settled as cooperatively as possible, and people can be punished for not doing that in the form of attorney's
fees. But the mandatory mediation is only as to child custody. It is not as to spousal support or
That's correct.
Things between the two spouses.
Correct.
You know, one thing, if you don't mind briefly, and then I'm going to take a very brief break. You mentioned when we were preparing for this, Esther, that you give your clients a task of something called values clarification exercise. Could you very briefly, in half a minute, tell us what you mean by that?
Sure, I'll do my best. I'll talk in my New York minute.
I
get parties who sometimes people will come in, Chuck, and they say to me they're very early on in the stage and they don't know if they should leave a moribund marriage or if they should get divorced. It's a choice between two terribly difficult paths. And so I give them an exercise of writing on a piece of paper the worst thing that will happen if I stay in one column, and on the other side, brainstorming solutions, what I can do about it. That's the label for the other column. The second piece of paper is the worst thing that will happen if I go and what I can do about it. What this does, I find, is get people out of a stuckness in their head and gets them to start realizing that there are options, there are alternatives, there is life after divorce should they choose to go that route. And it gets them to think creatively about solutions to what seem like these insurmountable problems that have them paralyzed by fear.
And this is something they're doing for themselves. You're not suggesting this to them. Is that right?
The exercise itself?
Well, the exercise you're suggesting.
I'm suggesting the exercise.
But what can happen?
I will have them go do this as homework.
Yeah.
For
I mean,
that,
you're not telling them this is what will happen if you do this.
Right.
This is what, they're doing this on their own. They're
correct.
Thinking about this.
Correct.
And they're coming out with some really good thought.
Right, exactly.
Processes.
It gets them thinking about, you know, things that they can do to improve their situation, whatever route they take.
All right, it's our Call a Lawyer night. I see Ron Rohde. He's walking around. I want him on the phone. I want him on the phone. It's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917 for our Call a Lawyer night. We have a number of fields here. We actually have eight attorneys here. I think we have five certified specialists, I believe. Yeah, we have five certified specialists. We've got workers' compensation law, criminal law, family law, legal malpractice law, estate planning. We also have landlord-tenant, of course, tax law, real estate, patent, aviation, lemon law, BBB arbitration. And tomorrow, if you are being hounded by creditors, Leon Baer, who's a certified specialist in bankruptcy law, will be taking your calls on his 800 number tomorrow, Thursday, between 8 a.m. and noon. And I'll let you know in the second half hour what his phone number is. And by the way, we will take your calls on our program, the Live on the Air program, about 7:30 or so. And let me give you that number. The Call a Lawyer number, by the way, is 1-800-525-9917. The number to call to be on Your Legal Rights on the Air is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. We're focusing on family law, and we're talking about how to avoid fighting and other unproductive divorce traps where people can get themselves into very expensive litigation, whereas if they had some opportunity to really think a little cooler, which is awfully hard in a divorce situation where you have a feeling of great anger for someone else. But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about how you can kind of lower the fight, lower the fire a bit. How do you deal with your clients on this, Doug?
In terms of
lowering the fire.
Well, I think the first thing that I want to do is I want to help the client in terms of two things I want to accomplish: realistic expectations. So they need to have realistic expectations in the case. So that means educating them early on in the process about what their legal rights and obligations are. And you'll quickly find out there's usually a wide divergence between what their legal rights and obligations are and maybe what their sense of fairness is.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you have to explain to them that, well, the other side may ultimately agree, and that may be great and that may be ideal, but if they don't, California law is going to govern the decisions on these issues. So it's very important early on to adjust the client's expectations, not only to the law, but also to the process, because the process can be very slow.
Mm-hmm.
There are things that are in your control. There are things that are not in your control, such as the other party, the other attorney, the speed that the process is going to. So expectations are extremely important in terms of managing them early on. Secondly, I would just add to what Esther said in terms of identifying what your values are. The sooner that you can have greater clarity in terms of what your values are, what your goals are, then you can start to empower yourself to start to think about what steps you can do to try and maximize your chances of doing that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if you're not aware of what your values are or what your goals are, you're going to have a difficult time reaching that. As Esther shared with...
But for example, yeah. I mean, your goal is presumably to get a divorce, but you need to have some specific direction. And that is, do I want to have a war? Do I want a pit bull as my attorney? Or do I want to have some peace of mind, the best I can have, in trying to get through this awful situation? Is that what you're talking about?
Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the early discussion points that we're going to have is what are the best modalities of trying to, mm-hmm. to reach that goal. And you have to deal with different contingencies, Chuck. So while I will typically recommend mediation as being probably the most intelligent forum for parties to maximize their chance of reaching an amicable settlement, if that's not the case, then you have to go to Plan B, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. figure out what that looks like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
Talk about these things, if you would, that you try to help your clients with in realizing that your goal of getting a divorce can be accomplished in a less explosive way as opposed to an explosive way. What are the things that you try to do for them?
I think one thing that I sometimes see, I mean, I want to go back to what Doug was saying. People first need to be educated about what the law will provide. So we will often see somebody coming in and saying, I kept putting money into my 401k and he or she kept spending all the money on mm-hmm. boats or motorcycles or mm-hmm. baby grand pianos or whatever it might be. And they are shocked to find out that despite the fact that they've been putting money into their 401k, it is not theirs. It is community property. Mm-hmm. So going back to...
Meaning it's owned equally by each.
Presuming
the 401k started during the course of their marriage.
Correct. So unless there was a premarital agreement defining otherwise, California law tells us how that's handled, and everything that is acquired during the marriage is considered community. And so this is, there are so many different examples that we could run through that we see, but that's just one very simple one where a party's expectations don't jive, or their notion of what is fair doesn't jive with what the law really provides, and that's where getting educated on what they're entitled to and what California law says about a particular issue really helps them, supports another one. People are sometimes shocked at how much of their paycheck ends up going toward paying spousal and child support. So mm-hmm. there are all these points, and it depends on each case, but where when the party comes in and tells us what the situation is, we're going to educate them about what California law says about it. Now, they might feel the need to do a lot of processing and reacting and all of that, and this is where there is a certain degree of information that's important to share with your lawyer. We need to know where you stand. But when it starts to morph into a therapeutic relationship, we're not therapists. Mm-hmm. We're not... Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's not our skill. That's not our training.
I am kind of a therapist without a license.
I was just about to kind of correct myself and say some of us are kind of skilled at it just by virtue of the nature of the job. This is different from every other kind of lawyering. However, it's money that's better spent on your legal case. Find a mental health professional to deal with mm-hmm. all of that, and don't turn your mm-hmm. lawyer into a mm-hmm. crutch that way. Mm-hmm. That's mm-hmm. really important line to draw. Having a good support system in place is another one. So relying on friends and family to talk things through, with the caveat that another mm-hmm. issue that we identified, which we see a lot, is well-meaning advice from other friends who have been through divorce. This can often lead people very far astray, because what happened in somebody else's divorce isn't necessarily the way yours is going to play out. The facts of every mm-hmm. divorce are different. Mm-hmm. So just because your neighbor got X amount in spousal support doesn't mean you're going to get X amount, or just because their custody plan was like this, or they got the house, the pension, and all this other list of assets, doesn't mean that your case will end up like that. And you look like you want to say something.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, you want to put support systems in place. Your family, your friends are really instrumental in terms of providing support to help you process.
Mm-hmm.
And that ultimately, when parties don't have that, then they wind up doing that with their attorney, which is not the most efficient thing. They're not going to do that with friends or family that they have. They should do that with a therapist. But sometimes friends and family increase stirring the pot. and add to that sense of unfairness.
Well, it's like taking sides, isn't it? I mean, if
very
the family
much.
Says, yes, he's all at fault. He's all at fault, that, Joan. He's all at fault.
Yes.
You're right. You're right. He's a real SOB.
And one of the things that I try and do in my cases to the extent possible is I want to try and empower people in the process. And one of the things that is very uncommon and unfortunately very unproductive in the divorce process is when a party has a hard time taking accountability, not for things that have happened in the past, but for what's going to happen now and how they're going to respond in the future.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Are you a total victim in the process, or are you going to say, I'm going to work with what I have now and I'm going to try and make the best of these circumstances?
All right. It's our Call a Lawyer night, and the number is 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. As I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, or a few minutes ago, pardon me, time is going so quickly. We have a number of different areas of the law, as we always do, actually, on Call a Lawyer night. So we've got patent law, aviation law, lemon law, tax law, real estate, landlord-tenant, estate planning, legal malpractice, family law, criminal law, workers' compensation law, 1-800-525-9917. And if you would like to, in the next few minutes, have a question for on the air for my guests, that number is 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing a program focusing on family law and how to avoid fighting and other unproductive divorce traps. My guests are both family lawyers. Both are former chairs of the San Mateo County Bar Association Family Law Section of the San Mateo County Bar. And both very experienced. And my friend Esther Rosenfeld, who's been a guest on this program a few times, suggested this would be a good thing to talk about. And that's what we're doing. And my other guest, Doug Robin, this is Doug's first time on the air, and actually you're doing a nice job.
Thank you, Chuck.
Very, very nice. Doug is also a specialist in family law certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. So you're talking about people starting to think about realistic expectations. I mean, what they are going to do once there is a divorce, there's a new relationship, isn't there, between each of these spouses. It's no longer a loving relationship. It's probably no longer necessarily, at least in the early part following the divorce, of a friendship. But if you have kids, there is going to be a relationship.
For many, many years.
And you don't want to hurt these kids.
Right. And that's a key point. I think it's crucial for people who are going through a divorce. At some point, they're going to be shifting from the intimacy of their marital relationship to a more arm's length, more of a business type relationship. Yeah. And I don't mean to suggest that there's anything cold or calculated about it, but really they're moving into a co-parenting relationship, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and they're going to be dealing with each other on a more distant level than they were previously.
And they need to model for their children what that relationship is going to look like. So that level of civility and respect is extremely important versus animosity, animus, which kids pick up on, and it's very destructive.
Very destructive. And there are also cases where at some point after going through certain phases, I mean, we really see phases like you may have heard about the stages of mourning that people go through,
yes,
when somebody dies.
Yes, of course.
There is an element of mourning. People are mourning the loss of a relationship, the loss of their expectations, mm-hmm, and their hope about, mm-hmm, what that would, mm-hmm, be. Mm-hmm. And so we see these different phases. And there might be a point where they come back around and they can become friends,
mm-hmm,
which is just the idea. Ideal divorces. Those are the ones that we often don't see because they're able to handle everything on their own.
Well,
God,
yeah,
bless them.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a very high percentage of people who are unrepresented in divorces, isn't there?
Yes.
How do these people deal with this type of a situation? What recommendation do you have for them?
In terms of high conflict situations?
Yeah, yeah. How do you recommend for what they might try to do?
I think all the same things that we're talking about. Now, they might not have the lawyer to educate them,
yes,
on the law if, for whatever reason, they you know, they can't afford a lawyer or whatever their situation is. But there are a lot of resources out there that they can get. There are books in the library. There's a mm-hmm. lot of information on the internet. Mm-hmm. You have to be careful about sifting through it.
Yes.
It has to be California
yes.
specific.
Yes. Yes.
But they can certainly get educated about what the law does in certain situations so that they can adjust their expectations mm-hmm. accordingly. Mm-hmm. And then these other things that we're talking about in terms of clarifying your values, figuring out where you want to go, because you want to have a map that's going to take you to your end goal, whatever mm-hmm. that might be.
Mm-hmm.
Understanding what your needs are, you know, and brainstorming how you can live with more limited resources, mm-hmm. which is usually the situation when we're dividing up to one household into two. And again, and you know, we were talking earlier about if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there, which is the importance of deciding on what you really need and mm-hmm. and being guided by your values, so that the process is not about taking positions, but it's really about your interests.
How do you, if someone, and I don't know what percentage you have found in your practices, respective practices, that your client has been very angry at the other spouse, but How do you go about helping someone who is so angry to try to realize the anger is not going to help you in terms of what you're going to go through in a divorce? How do you try to help them? I mean, you talk about, Esther, you talked about your values clarification exercise where someone lists, this is what can happen if I do this, and this is a second sheet, this is what can happen if I do this.
Well, and else? The what I can do about it.
Yeah, point. What so I can do about
it. It's about getting your worst fears.
Yes.
So many times people are, this is a state of total uncertainty. As Doug was saying, sometimes people have never been divorced before. They've never been in a courtroom before. They've never been served with a lawsuit. And the divorce paperwork looks like any other mm-hmm. lawsuit when you're served with it. And so there's all this fear and uncertainty. And because of that, they're just resisting. They're digging in their heels. They want things to stay the same, or you know, they don't know what they want. They want the opposite of whatever the other person
sure,
wants.
Sure, of course.
And so, so brainstorming the what I can do about it is a really valuable exercise.
And I would just say, in terms of when I see those behaviors manifest in the case and they're being unproductive, I'd like to put it on the table and have that conversation with the client.
Mm-hmm.
Just
mm-hmm.
be very direct.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand you're experiencing, mm-hmm. you know, this anger. Because people need to be heard, okay? And once they heard, then they usually have an ability to listen, and then you make the next step. It's not helping you in this case.
Mm-hmm.
It's counterproductive. We're winding up in, you know, a pissing contest over, you know, these things that
should not
be occurring, and it's having you know, a dramatic effect, and sometimes also in terms of how the attorneys interact. It's a very, very toxic thing, and I have found that being very candid and caring with clients about this at least gives them the opportunity to reflect and consider modifying their behavior. And one of the things that we're really trying to do is to take clients from a place of being highly reactive to responding. And responding really means slowing down, acting from a more purposeful place. And you may need to react. You may need to react with your friends, but do it before you respond to the other side.
And let me just add real quickly that
you can
there's always something. Gratitude sounds like a counterintuitive yes. concept to bring into this process, but you can always find something to appreciate. Appreciation is recognizing the value of something. Can you recognize the value of your ex in terms of having given you your children? I think so. Most people would say yes to that.
Thank you.
And that may be about it.
We're going to end the statewide version at this point. All right. It's about 7:29 and a half at 91.7, your local public radio station. I see Catherine Ray Wong standing up. We want her on the phone. Estate planning. She's a certified specialist in estate planning. I want her on the phone. It's 1-800-525-9917. This is our Call a Lawyer night. Let me tell you who's here. And these are the certified specialists. Workers' Compensation, Alice O'Sullivan, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Criminal Law, Jeff Hayden, Certified Specialist. Family Law, Janet Lee Frankel, Certified Specialist. Legal Malpractice Law, Certified Specialist Peter Fortune. Estate Planning, I just mentioned Catherine Ray Wong, Certified Specialist. Pardon me. Landlord-Tenant Law, first time Terry Mayo is here for that. Patent Law, Aviation, Lemon Law, Arbitration, BBB Arbitration, Ron Rohde, who's been here before, Frank Adam for Tax Law and Real Estate. And then tomorrow, in case you're being hounded by creditors, Leon Baer, pardon me, I'm sorry, a Certified Specialist in Bankruptcy Law will be available by his 800 number, 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111 between 8 a.m. and noon. That's tomorrow, Thursday, November 21st. If you call and get his answering machine, leave your name and phone number. He'll call you back. He's incredibly generous with his time. So for Call a Lawyer this evening, 1-800-525-9917. If you would like to talk with my guests on the air, Esther Rosenfeld and Doug Robin, it's 1-415-841-4134, 1-415-841-4134. So please don't be bashful. If you have a question, a comment, a concern, and it's bothering you, whether it's involving spousal support or child support or child custody, please don't hesitate to call in. Support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco. If you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. For a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. This program is funded by the San Mateo County Bar Association and the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. The Bar Association of San Mateo also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you're in any other county in the state of California, every county has a Bar Association and lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to set you up with an attorney for a half an hour consultation. And depending on the county, for half an hour, it could be a low of $25, maybe a high of $35. If you are looking for a certified specialist in any one of the 11 fields that are certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, you can either call the statewide number, which is 415-538-2100, 415-538-2100, or you can go to the State Bar website, www.calbar.ca.gov, and go to Legal Specialists, and you can find out who the certified specialists are in the area that you're concerned about in your area. All right. Here's a question that someone has asked. It's a little bit off what we are focusing on, but I think at this point, any question you might have on family are welcome on the air. This particular caller wants to know, how are spousal support and child support calculated? What's the difference between the two? What formulas applied to figure this out? Now, that's a big subject in and of itself, but can you briefly respond to that?
Sure. So child support in California is according to a guideline. It's a very complicated formula that's set out by statute that nobody does longhand. Uh-huh. Everybody has computer software that does it, including the judges. And the two primary, there are many factors that, many inputs into that. The two primary factors are timeshare and income of the parties.
By timeshare means how much time the parent spends with the child?
Precisely.
Okay.
So the two main determiners of what that number will be are the income and the custodial timeshare mm-hmm. that the parties have. Mm-hmm. Spousal support for the temporary period, and by temporary period, I mean the date that the petition is filed until the date that a judgment is obtained, is also calculated by the same kind of software. Mm-hmm. But for the long term, what used to be called permanent spousal support, but nobody calls permanent anymore because there ain't no such thing. Excuse me. I'm catching whatever you've got.
You're getting all excited about this. I can tell.
Is a determination that a court will make if the parties don't reach their own stipulation, that is, according to a set of factors, a whole laundry list of factors that's also set out by code, and is capped at the marital standard of living. So just because your former spouse may have gone on after the date of the divorce and earned twice or three times as much as was earned during the marriage doesn't mean you're entitled to a piece of it. Your kids will be, because that number will get plugged into that guideline calculation. But for the spouse, it's capped at the marital standard.
Are the guidelines something accessible by the public? Could someone go on the website somewhere and find this? Where would they find it?
The Department of Child Support Services has one.
That's correct.
That's the California Department of Child.
Yeah, so I think it's the DCSS.org. I'm not sure what but if you Google California Department of Child Support Services, you'll find theirs. Did you have any other?
No, I was just going to say, if you Google, you know, child support calculations calculator, you'll get access to some of the online programs that will allow you to do those calculations.
Okay. All right. Let's do this. Sergio, welcome to Your Legal Rights. Sergio, are you there?
Thank you for taking Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, my question is regarding spousal support and a little bit of child support. I have 50-50 custody of three of our children, or of our underage children. Yet I still pay $3,000 a month in both spousal support and child support. The spousal support is about $600, and the difference is in child support. The reason that I pay so much, even though that I have 50-50 custody, is that my ex-wife claims that she doesn't work. And she does work. She just happens to work for cash under the table. So what I'm wondering is, I've had a really hard time, and I've been making these payments, and you know, for maybe 2 to 3 years now. But it is very frustrating to me, because I know that I'm paying $3,000 a month. I have 50-50 custody, so I need money as well when I have my daughters, and I just can't prove that she is working, because there's no record.
Sergio, do you know if your former wife actually files a tax return?
I know that she does not.
She does not. So she's a real. She's obviously not complying with the law. What comments do you have for him? And by the way, did you have an attorney during the course of your divorce?
I consulted with an attorney before going into court every time. I just couldn't afford to receive one, but did go in and pay an hourly wage.
Let me see if I can get some comments for you of what you might possibly do at this point. Doug, do you have any comments?
Well, yeah, my preliminary comment is you're in a difficult situation, in the sense if your ex is receiving money under the table, and the burden of proof is on you, essentially, to prove something that she's clearly indicating that she's not receiving, that's a difficult position to be on. You have to come up with qualitative evidence that would convince the court that she's, in fact, receiving money under the table. One alternative way of approaching this would be to present to the court evidence of what her earning capacity is, and to request a work efforts order that she diligently...
A work effort order? A work efforts order.
Yes.
I've never heard that. Okay.
And so that would require her to seek employment in good faith. Mm-hmm. And if you had somebody who could establish what her earning capacity is, if the court determined at a certain point in time that she hasn't been using her good faith efforts, then they could impute her with income, saying essentially it's your choice that you're not working. So that may be an alternative way.
Could he go to the family law facilitator's office in the county where he lives or where the divorce was granted, and perhaps get some direction in putting together this kind of a motion to the court? Since obviously he can't afford hiring a private attorney.
That's a great suggestion, Chuck. The family law facilitator's office will help him, direct him in terms of filing the appropriate paperwork and give him the appropriate guidance.
I think that's what you might try to do, Sergio. What county are you in? Where was the divorce granted?
Contra Costa County.
Yeah. There's a child support Family Law Facilitator's Office, in Contra Costa County. You want to contact the county there and talk about going and getting some help from someone. They can't represent you, but they can help you with the right paperwork. And that's something, if you haven't tried doing that, it's available to you, no cost.
Yeah, no, thank you very much for this advice. And I have a few good bullet points here that I can follow up on, like earning capacity, work effort, order, and then establishing some sort of wage that she's able to earn. I really appreciate it.
And also, Sergio, we have Janet Lee Frankel here tonight, who's a certified specialist in family law. If you want to have a chance to talk to her a bit while we still have Call a Lawyer Night, I don't know if you got the number, but it's 1-800-525-9917, and ask for Janet.
9197.
Yeah, it's 1-800-525-9917.
9917.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Give her a call.
Yeah, good luck to you. By the way, Martin just brought in to the studio the California Department of Child Support Services. The website is www.childsup, that's childsup dot ca.gov. www.childsup, childsup dot ca.gov, in case you want to go and find out the formula, or at least find out how you can plug in your numbers and maybe get an idea of what the situation is on the calculation of child support, spousal support, etc. All right, let's see. I want to give you an opportunity to call in 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. Obviously, I think that it's very important if someone is going through a divorce and can afford an attorney. I think you, if I may suggest this to both of you, I think one needs to find out from the attorney, what is your philosophy in handling a divorce case, whether it's with children or without children? Do you like to battle, or do you feel that it's important to try to cooperate with the other party and the other party's attorney if the other party has an attorney? To me, I think that's very important that a consumer of legal services asks these kind of questions.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, please.
I think that's very important. Sometimes people need to interview with more than one attorney until they find somebody who's the right fit.
You feel good. And you can tell in your stomach if you feel good.
Yeah.
I mean, although the whole point of divorce is a very disturbing matter for one's abdomen. Very disturbing. My guests are family law attorneys, and actually both of them former chairs of the family law section of the San Mateo County Bar Association, Esther Rosenfeld, who has an office in San Mateo. My other guest is Douglas Robin. And Doug's also a specialist in family law, certified by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. He has his office in Menlo Park. So if you want to call in, ask a question, make a comment, it's 1-415-841-4134. And let me also mention something to you. You're probably wondering, why are they doing Call a Lawyer on the third Wednesday of the month? Well, frankly, I didn't want to do Call a Lawyer on Thanksgiving Eve. I bet you wonder why. Why, Chuck?
I've been wondering that this whole time. I'm glad you finally got to that.
Yeah. So in any event, we're going to take off Thanksgiving Eve, and there will be a special program in this time slot next Wednesday evening. And then the next program will be on December 4th. And for those of you who may have some tax questions, you're wondering, gee, can I write this off? Can I do this as an expense on my tax return? Well, we're going to talk about year-end tax tips on December 4th, and my guest will be David Hillman, a certified specialist in taxation and estate planning who's done this with me for several years now. He will be here, and so start working up your tax questions or your tax concerns, because that's what we're going to be doing a couple of weeks from now on December 4th. All right, Jonathan, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is in regard to assets that you bring into marriage in form of a real estate. And then these assets may appreciate over time. How does the court decide about those appreciation or the original value of the assets in the case of a separation?
Depends on the title. Just a question for clarification, Jonathan. What's the title of the property? Has it been changed into community property during the marriage?
Well, the situation is that the title of the property originally was only on me, but later on I sold that property and purchased the second property, which the title was in the name of both of us.
Yes. So, well, there's a family code 2640, which recognizes a party's separate property contribution to new real property. So if you're able to trace the down payment from the old property into the new property, then you would have a separate property reimbursement claim to the extent of that down payment. However, it wouldn't participate in the appreciation of the property to the extent that the second property was titled in community property.
Oh, I see. That was exactly my question. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. All right. Who else? We have a number of people who do want to talk to you. The number again, 1-415-841-4134. Again, the Call a Lawyer number is 1-800-525-9917. And again, I want to let you know that if you are being hounded by creditors tomorrow morning between 8 a.m. and noon, that's tomorrow, Thursday, November 21st, certified specialist in bankruptcy Leon Bayer will be available to talk with you. His number, and by the way, no charge whatsoever. This is all a public service that the attorneys here at the station are doing this evening and that Mr. Bayer is doing tomorrow between 8 a.m. and noon. And his number is 1-800-477-3111, 1-800-477-3111. And we have right now John. John, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yeah. I heard one of the guests mention arbitration.
Yes.
And I don't know what that is, and I was just wanting them to explain what that is.
Are you talking with the concept of family law?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Who would like to talk about it? Do you want to, Esther?
Sure.
Yeah, please.
John, an arbitrator is somebody that, similar to a mediator but different, the parties agree to go to in order to settle disputes. And typically in family law, when it comes down to the property, items of property like personal property that parties aren't able to decide on, they might go to an arbitrator. So the reason I say it's different from mediation is because whereas a mediator is a facilitator who helps the two sides come to their own solution, when you agree to going to binding arbitration, you're giving the power to the arbitrator to make a decision the way a judge would.
And the arbitrator in going and doing this, the arbitrator makes a final decision. Is that correct? As to, with respect to mediation, is not a final decision.
Correct.
Okay. Did you understand that, John?
I think so, yeah. So
okay.
Would there still be attorneys involved at that point?
Not necessarily. You can go into an arbitration on your own. And let me just clarify that you could agree to, it depends on, again, this is the type of thing where it's a form of alternative dispute resolution. It's the type of thing that you and your, the other side, your spouse or your ex-spouse, are going to agree to go to together. So you can define it to be either binding or a non-binding arbitration, depending on the terms. I think the kind that Chuck was just referring to would be the binding arbitration. But I don't, you would not go in with your attorneys in most cases.
Oh, okay.
All right. Well, very good, John. Good luck to you. My thought, since you are obviously not sure what you want to do, that's what I'm getting from your question here, it might make some sense for you to contact your local bar association or county bar association lawyer referral panel or lawyer referral section and see if you can have at least an initial meeting, if you have not had one before, with a family lawyer and sit down and talk a bit about, at least in half an hour, about the idea of arbitration, mediation, etc., so that you are more let's say, versed in what you might do in the future if you're going to do anything. Another thing that I am a real believer in, there's a publisher of legal oversized paper books called NOLO, N-O-L-O, who has been involved with my program ever since we started it, which is nearly 30 years ago, not as a funder, but people who are the authors of these various books being guests on the program over the years. And I think there is a book on divorce, dissolution of marriage. It's not that
expensive. Pardon? There are several.
There are several, mm-hmm. Yeah. They're not that expensive. If you don't want to buy any or all of them, you can go to probably the consumer section of your local public library and find one or more of them there and start doing some review and kind of get a feel for this. I think it's a great way to educate yourself. I'm a real believer in consumers educating themselves in this kind of thing. You don't have to be a lawyer to educate yourself into what your rights and obligations are. It's helpful to start educating yourself so that when you do get a lawyer, if you do, you can ask some decent questions. And so good luck to you on that. And we've got Barry. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hello there.
Hi.
Hi. My question is in regards to move-aways.
This is where one spouse who has custody of a child or children is going to move away from the area where the marriage has been. Is that correct?
Well, I think that it can apply in various different applications. I mean, in some situations, there may not even be custody even established. Mm-hmm. In this particular case, that would be the case. So as far as, like, just getting an understanding of how that works in that situation, what we had, in a scenario where basically one parent moves away, they were not married, one parent moves away from the other parent, there was already a court filing of custody right at that particular point. Soon after the filing of the papers where it submitted, they moved away 75 miles, which was out of the jurisdiction, which was written in some of the paperwork as far as there was an order. Mm. So in that regard, you know, and also the other parent works in the particular area, the other area where they moved away from, where the child has been at and resided at, you know, how does that apply?
Well, where is the child with all of this move away going on? Is the child staying where the child has been, or is the child going where the other spouse is moving away to?
Both.
Both. Okay. All right. Go ahead, if you would, Doug, please.
My first follow-up question would be, if you had an order prior to your the mother moving away, did it provide a specific time schedule in terms of when you would have the child and when she would have the child?
At that particular time, they had a temporary order.
Right. And did that temporary order provide for a specific schedule in terms of how you were going to share the child or children?
At that time, yes, that was correct. There was more time with the father.
Okay. Well, if you have an order and a party moves, then it may be a question of enforcement. If there's an order and a party moves and they frustrate or they make compliance with the order impossible, then you have the ability to file a motion to request compliance with the order or to enjoin the move or to request that the party move back. If the party has, in fact, moved away and has basically frustrated the possibility of the implementation of the order. Does that make sense?
Correct. I'm wondering also, is it the fact that they're already residing in that other area and they're sharing custody of the child, and at this particular time the temporary order has been brought down to 50-50, where does that leave things, and does that mean that they're just residing there, and does that make it more a difficult situation for, you know, this case?
I guess I'm a little, let me ask another clarification question because I'm a little unclear on the facts in this situation. They've got a 50-50 custody order, from what I understand. It's a temporary order. They're living in two different states or two different areas, and they are sharing custody pursuant to the custody order despite the difference, despite the distance between them. Is that correct?
They're living in the same state, 75 miles apart.
Okay.
They're at this point they're sharing 50-50, which previously it was not. It's now 50-50 as a temporary order.
So the court order allows for 50-50. When the court order allowing for 50-50 was made, were they already 75 miles apart? In other words, was that one of the factors that the court was taking into consideration in crafting that order? Or did the move happen after the order was made?
To my knowledge, no, they weren't. There wasn't good representation on the father's side, so, in this case.
Right now, is the order being complied with?
Is the order being complied with? To my knowledge, I'm unaware of all the details of the paperwork.
This is not your particular personal situation. Okay. Is that right, Barry?
It is.
Yes. You know, you're very vague on this, and it's to be very frank with you, you are very vague on this, and it's very difficult with the different variations of what you're giving here for my guests to give you any real direction, and the State Bar doesn't permit my guests on this program to give specific legal advice. Have you seen the lawyer?
Yes.
Okay. What county are you in?
Alameda.
Yeah. Were you represented by a lawyer, or did you just have a very brief...
Previously, I had a new lawyer, and the lawyer made some large mistakes that
okay.
I'm having to deal with and having to
change attorneys. Let me suggest something to you. Do you have something to write with?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I'm going to suggest to you that you might want to make an appointment to meet with a certified specialist in family law. And you can either call the statewide number, which for the Board of Legal Specialization, 415-538-2100. Being a certified specialist means they have to jump over a lot of hoops and take essentially an additional bar exam, et cetera, and have practiced for quite a while. The other thing to do is you can go to the State Bar website, www.calbar.ca.gov, and on the left side of the screen, you will see legal specialists. You can then access that and find out in your geographic area who the certified specialists are. I think at this point, since you have a rather complicated set of facts, it sounds like, because we can't pin you down. That's the problem, Barry, at this point. I don't mean to be negative, but my guests have tried to, but you seem to fluctuate. So I think you need to have an appointment like this with a certified specialist, someone who's had considerable experience who can help you, and I wish you the best. Good luck to you.
Appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, you're very welcome. By the way, I want to thank you both, but hold on just a minute. I just want to let everybody know that we will be back with you again on Wednesday, December 4th for for income tax tips. If you have any, start working on them as soon as you can. I want to thank you both very much for joining us. My guests have been two very experienced family law attorneys, Esther Rosenfeld, whose office is in San Mateo, and Doug Robin, whose office is in Menlo Park. Excuse me.
Okay.
Menlo Park. Doug is also a certified specialist in family law. Both of them are former chairs of the family law section of the San Mateo County Bar Association. Thank you very much for joining us.
Your
Legal Rights production staff members are program engineer Joanne Marr and production assistant Martin McLean. Funding for Your Legal Rights has been made possible by the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar, the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Family Law Section of the State Bar, the Trust and Estate Section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law Section of the State Bar, the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, and the California Applicants Attorneys Association. I wish you all a very happy Thanksgiving. and join us again. I'm Chuck Finney.